Today, I'll be chatting about someone I have meant to discuss since I started Portraits of Liberty. Adam Ferguson, one of the great theorists of the Scottish Enlightenment. Though Ferguson is mainly read today by academic scholars, he laid the foundations for the theory of spontaneous order and how free societies evolve. His writings remain relevant and essential to understanding the classical liberal tradition. Adam Ferguson was born in 1723 in Perthshire, Scotland. He was named after his father, a minister of his local parish. Ferguson's family was descended from the gentry of Scottish society, but by the 18th century, they lived in what was called genteel poverty. That, however, did not stop Ferguson from attaining an education. After graduating from his local parish school, Ferguson attended Perth Grammar School, then St. Andrew's University. The path of Ferguson's education was typical of the time. He studied Latin and Greek alongside mathematics, moral philosophy, and natural philosophy. Initially, Ferguson aimed to follow his father's path, becoming a man of the church. After receiving his master's from St. Andrew's in 1742, Ferguson moved to Edinburgh to pursue further studies in divinity. Ferguson grew up in Perthshire, on the border between the Scottish lowlands and the highlands. His upbringing brought Ferguson into contact with both extremes of Scottish society. The more educated and polished lowlands contrasted with the rough simplicity of the highlands. Ferguson spoke Scots Gaelic, closely related to the Celtic languages of Manx and Irish. Many notable Enlightenment thinkers came from urban centres full of intellectuals, but Ferguson's life near the periphery of the newly formed United Kingdom gave him an alternative perspective on the nature of civilization and conflict. In 1707, Scotland joined the Union of Parliaments, forming what we now call the United Kingdom. The Union Agreement dissolved the Edinburgh Parliament and ended the long-standing tradition of Scottish independence. Though some welcomed the change, many were disgusted and channeled support to the exiled Stuart monarchy. In the south, England had become a constitutional monarchy, and the closest thing the world would see to a modern republic until the founding of America. While studying at Edinburgh, Ferguson was offered a position as chaplain for the Black Watch, a newly formed regiment of Highlanders formed to aid British forces fighting in Flanders. Ferguson was a perfect choice thanks to his fluency in Scots Gaelic. By 1746, he was promoted to the post of principal chaplain. Ferguson was accustomed to and enjoyed the military life. Though he would eventually leave his position as chaplain in 1754, his military habits never really left him. It is unclear exactly why Ferguson left the military, but some scholars theorize he left due to a lack of opportunity to make a living from clerical work. At no point in his life was Ferguson an exceptionally wealthy man. He lived an upper-middle-class lifestyle, but his early experiences of financial insecurity never really left his psyche. His position provided him with the resources and the time to translate his ideas to paper. Ferguson did not immediately return to Scotland after his jaunt in the military. He spent a year in mainland Europe tutoring law students in the city of Leipzig in modern-day Germany. When Ferguson returned, his good friends and fellow Scots and philosophers, David Hume and Adam Smith, were developing theories of progress. Since 1707, lowland Scotland underwent rapid cultural and economic growth. Because of this, the Highlands became an object of cultural embarrassment among the newly educated Scots, who viewed their Highland counterparts as walking relics of a bygone era. But Ferguson viewed things very differently. His upbringing close to the Highlands and his service of the Black Watch convinced him that Highlanders preserved particular virtues and practices that had been rapidly fading as Scottish society became more and more urban and commercial. Ferguson cemented his reputation as a soldier philosopher when he published his pamphlet, Reflections Previous to the Establishment of a Militia. In it, he argued that a militia was superior to a professional, paid, standing army because it promoted civic virtues needed to maintain a free society. Ferguson began to contemplate a theme that would run throughout all of his major works. Is economic growth incompatible with civic virtue? After leaving the military, Ferguson tutored the sons of a politically prominent earl before being appointed chair of natural philosophy at the University of Edinburgh. Natural philosophy was the forerunner of modern science and covered topics in physics, chemistry, and biology. Ferguson attained an appointment more suitable to his talents in 1764 when he was appointed chair of pneumatics, an early version of the philosophy of mind and moral philosophy. Similar to other Scottish Enlightenment thinkers such as David Hume or Adam Smith, Ferguson was enraptured by the ideas of Montesquieu, the French historian and philosopher. Throughout his Spirit of the Laws and Persian Letters, Montesquieu theorized that a new form of freedom had emerged, one that was different from the conception typical of the classical Greek and Roman ideas. Montesquieu, alongside Turgot, was an early adopter of the idea of progress. This is the belief that humans have the power to improve their condition over time. This may seem extremely obvious to modern sensibilities, but it challenged traditional beliefs that human existence was relatively static and that the possibilities to rise above your station were remote. Montesquieu provided Ferguson with a comprehensive knowledge of history and justifications for an emerging political form of freedom that became the staple of Enlightenment philosophy. Ferguson deeply admired Montesquieu, writing, "When I recollect what the President Montesquieu has written, I am at a loss to tell why I should treat of human affairs." But Ferguson was also influenced by ancient thinkers. Throughout his oeuvre, Ferguson peppers quotations from Roman statesman, orator, and philosopher Cicero, and from Stoic figures such as Marcus Aurelius and Epictetus. Like his contemporaries, Ferguson believed the ancient Greeks and Romans had understood and recorded timeless principles of political life. Ferguson's essay on the history of civil society established his reputation as a serious scholar, but also illustrated how differently Ferguson saw the world and his contemporaries. His essay covers what was then called philosophical history, but what we now roughly call today sociology, the study of how societies change. Like many European intellectuals of the 18th century, Ferguson concerned himself with notions of progress and decline, different types of governments, and the tension between our private and public duties. Ferguson was an advocate of progress. His Natural History of the Human Race was a story of the transition from simplicity to civilization. In fact, Ferguson was among the first to use the term civilization extensively. Like Hume and Smith, Ferguson was a proponent of the emerging liberal order in the United Kingdom. Ferguson appreciated developments in religious freedom, freedom of speech, private property, and widespread legal rights. Unlike his contemporaries, Ferguson did not believe the future would bring an eternally improving species. He recognized the benefits of liberty, but also how fragile liberty was. Like his later admirer, Friedrich Hayek, Ferguson wished to step away from the language of natural law and rights that Enlightenment thinkers usually employed in their defense of a free society. Instead, Ferguson wanted to explain a more secular, adaptive account of how free society develops and how to best maintain its benefits. Liberty for Ferguson resulted from the evolution in the common law, not natural Lockean rights. Though the history of civil society is a wide-ranging book, I'll focus on three main themes: Ferguson's conception of history and human nature, his theory of spontaneous order, and lastly, how conflict drives social and legal evolution. Unlike Voltaire and Hume, who had great confidence in the progress of civilization, Ferguson believed highly developed societies were in danger of regressing to barbarism. Many Enlightenment thinkers who espoused theories of progress expressed optimism for humanity's perfectibility. Ferguson's view of history is indeterminist and open-ended. He did not believe in any magic formula for a predictable progressive future. This is because Ferguson saw humans as fundamentally restless beings. He viewed society as being composed of men who fight, trade, and compete against one another. Ferguson wrote very little about how women contribute to society, but we'll leave that to one side for now. Nonetheless, Ferguson has a point. Political philosophers and students of civilization often see humans as unchanging and abstract beings. A policy wonk might say GDP is projected to grow by 2%, but this obscures the infinite, intricate details of human motivation that drive the economy. Humans are restless, constantly improving or altering their world. We are also blessed and kind of cursed with a sense of adventure and a desire for new and novel things. Previous social contract theorists like Thomas Hobbes, John Locke, and Jean-Jacques Rousseau argued that people convene to form a state by agreeing to live under certain rules and a system of government for their mutual benefit and protection. Now, individual philosophers tailored this conjectural history/theory to their preferences, but Ferguson believed states and governments did not come from explicit agreements. Instead, they were formed by the workings of civil society, an important concept that Ferguson pioneered and later liberals like Friedrich Hayek developed further. Social contract theory was too static for Ferguson. Humans are not inanimate objects that operate under simple rules. We are ambitious, restless, and competitive people. Humans do their best work under pressure and in times of extreme need. Everything around us, from social niceties such as handshakes to complicated legal systems, are a result of gradual evolution of values and habits alongside institutional conflict. Our present behaviors, customs, and institutions are not designed in the moment in the abstract, but have emerged out of a complex history. Though much of our lot in life is dictated by circumstance or habit, that does not preclude the possibility of change. Deemed by many later scholars to be a pioneer of sociology, Ferguson was interested in how society changes over hundreds, if not thousands, of generations. Ferguson constructed a conjectural history of how governments formed, using as much evidence as he had available to him from ancient and modern sources. He concluded that the state, laws, and societal norms developed thanks mainly to the strengthening of civil society. Civil society denotes institutions and organizations distinct from state-run bureaucracies and purely private enterprises for profit. The aims of institutions and individuals in civil society vary and are open-ended, including educational, spiritual, and even health concerns. Examples of civil society institutions include schools, universities, advocacy groups, churches, and sports associations. Civil society involves collective action, but unlike the state, it has no explicitly coercive features or a monopoly over violence. Ferguson stressed that a free society cannot exist without first having a civil society. But civil society is not a legislative body. Its ideas and habits have been passed down throughout generations and developed imperceptibly before us. Without any particular leader or master coordinator, individuals follow patterns and codes of conduct while they pursue their own interests, and this activity tends to improve the overall collective outcomes of all. Friedrich Hayek would later call the emergence of complex social phenomena without the presence of a centralized coordination spontaneous order. Manners, niceties, and customs are adopted first by some, but eventually by many, in a given society, leading to arrangements that dictate the rules of human interaction without being the products of human design. No one person or group of people dictated or enforced these norms. Instead, they are the result of countless individuals' self-direct interactions towards their own self-interested ends. When we talk about society, architectural and mechanical analogies fall flat. Society is not a dead or inanimate thing. It is an active and living thing. And for Ferguson, this organic model represents commotion and action, the churnings of a free society. Ferguson describes this process eloquently, writing, "Every step and every movement in the multitude, even what are termed enlightened ages, are made with equal blindness to the future, and nations stumble upon establishments, which are indeed the result of human action, but not the execution of any human design." Spontaneous order describes phenomena that may appear to be disordered, but viewed over time and at distance, a greater order becomes apparent. Ferguson focused on how conflict creates change and stability in the long run. This is not a new idea. Ferguson was drawing from ancient historians like Tacitus and Polybius and the Renaissance Florentine Machiavelli. Ferguson endorses the Greek historian Polybius's thesis that the Roman Republic was successfully maintained not by abstract reasoning, but in the words of Polybius, through many struggles and difficulties, and from the continually adopting reforms from knowledge gained through experience. Conflict can be destructive, but that isn't the whole story. We are accustomed to thinking of conflict as a negative thing, a destructive force. But for Ferguson, humans are motivated by the twin drives of union and opposition. A free society is not created by a master legislator writing the most rational and perfect laws. It is maintained and molded by conflicting factions and groups' interests. Rejecting utopianism, Ferguson saw that conflict had an integral role to play in the history of civilization and its future. Ferguson laid down the foundations for an agonistic form of liberalism. Liberty must arise out of conflict, compromise, and adaptive evolution. Ferguson's essay was met with acclaim throughout the United Kingdom. His audience was enlarged by translations into German and French over the following decades. Though his essay in the history of civil society made him famous throughout Europe, Ferguson's most popular work while he was alive was his History of Progress and the Termination of the Roman Republic, which kept his legacy alive in Britain and America, gaining esteem fans such as Edward Gibbons and John Stuart Mill. Despite his cautious embrace of modernity's benefits, Ferguson did not support the cause of American independence and had very little sympathy for the French revolutionaries. Ferguson criticized the extension of popular political participation and universal suffrage. Ferguson followed the 18th century trend of criticizing the traumatic excess of democracy etched into the European psyche by the historical example of Athens. Athens would not be rehabilitated into a positive case for democracy until the British thinker George Grote wrote his History of Ancient Greece in 1846. For Ferguson, confounding freedom and political participation was dangerous. The power to participate in government does not guarantee freedom. After all, many of the most horrific regimes constantly purport to be of the people and make great shows of their so-called democratic processes. In an argument more influential in recent years, Ferguson is cited by some liberal thinkers, following the lead of Friedrich Hayek, as an authority for the proposition that nations stumble upon establishments. Hayek credited the Scottish Enlightenment with the commercial argument behind a free society. Still, of all its figures, he praises Ferguson's intellectual achievement of uncovering the inner workings of civil society and spontaneous order. Ferguson identified that unchanging laws and institutions do not mark a free society, but its opposite. Dynamism, through correctly channeled conflict, created the best outcomes, not futile attempts at historical stasis. Hayek and Ferguson shared the objective of articulating the principles of a free society without reliance upon natural law, substituting a social scientific answer of spontaneous order. Many scholars see Ferguson as a critic of overzealous political and economic liberalism. He appreciated modernity, yet he knew it was a fragile order. Humans have the potential to be either progressive or regressive beings. Ferguson provides some salve to our ego's wound, writing, "We are generally at a loss to conceive how mankind can subsist under customs and manners extremely different from our own, but every age hath its consolations as well as its sufferings." Ferguson belongs to that niche list of thinkers who pioneered the underpinnings of what we call today the sociology of freedom, an extremely underrated tradition that needs to be revived.